Morning. I thought on this Mental Health Sunday and Memorial Day weekend that it would be fitting to talk about He-Man. Anybody remember He-Man? Okay, well, we're not going to talk about that He-Man. I want to talk to you about He-Man the Ezrahite. He-Man was a musician in the court of King David, and he played the lyre, which is what my daughter Lyra is named for. When He-Man went through times of deep depression, he poured out his feelings in music. When he was in a time of sadness, he would take his lyre and just pour out his feelings of sadness, isolation, anger, abandonment, mistrust, spiritual emptiness, and hopelessness. At these times, living did not seem like a good option to He-Man because it felt like, in the ways that mattered, he was already dead. What energy he has left for living is consumed with anxiety and these hopeless, racing thoughts. So he sings them and even writes them down, never imagining how long his words would last, thinking he was the only one who ever felt this bad, not realizing how deeply relatable his experience of depression would be throughout the centuries, never knowing that we would still sing his words to this day. It's possible that He-Man the Ezrahite, who wrote Psalm 88, suffered from what we call today clinical depression. There's also the elderly King Saul, who was a veteran. Saul is said to be tormented by, quote, an evil spirit. And in the face of these terrible rages, the people around him pull away in fear, unsure how to react, how to help this troubled behavior. Often people try to explain behaviors that we do not understand by labeling them as an evil spirit or as punishment from God, without science to diagnose and treat his condition. The king's career and legacy were on a path of destruction. He's taking his family and the people around him down with him. Today, we would wonder if King Saul possibly had a condition such as dementia or maybe an unrecognized mental illness. And there's another story, a jailer who had inflicted great wounds on other human beings. His work is in the Philippian prison, and it causes him so much toxic stress that he lives with panic and anxiety every day. Consumed by guilt over violence he participates in because of his service, he lives always on edge, looking behind him, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Today we might say this jailer was experiencing moral injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. So when he makes a big mistake at the jail, a mistake with disastrous consequences to his employer, he is sure there will be no forgiveness, and the shame on his family will be unending. With this trauma response, he feels in his body that he could not survive the kind of punishment that he deals out, and so he makes plans to end his life through suicide. Let's think about a more modern story now. In the year 2019, the COVID pandemic arrived and, in a few short years, caused levels of depression and anxiety to skyrocket. Since the pandemic, rates of mental illness have doubled from 1 in 5 Americans to 2 in 5 Americans. And according to the CDC, 10% of high school students tried to end their lives in the last 2 years. And 37% reported that they were experiencing poor mental health at least most of the time. But friends, we can tell a new story. Because along with these rising numbers, we are seeing a rising awareness and more people breaking the silence about mental health. In the United Church of Christ, 40 congregations so far have studied and discerned to begin mental health ministries and undertake something that Chris described called the Wise Covenant. Wise congregations work to become more welcoming of those who live with mental health challenges, to expand their inclusion of those who live with mental health conditions, to engage in advocacy relating to resources and ending the stigma of mental health challenges, and to be supportive of all who are affected by these conditions. And thank goodness there have been wise churches existing from the very beginning of Christianity. We heard that when the jailer in Philippi plans to end his life, the apostles Paul and Silas are there. They say, "Stop and do not harm yourself." Then they stay by his side, although he was the one who had imprisoned them. They gave him the opportunity to wash and tend the very wounds that his employer had placed in their bodies. And then they work with him to open up a new phase in his life where there is food and family, healing and redemption. This is the definition of community, isn't it? And in the secular realm, there is a training, it's another acronym, not WISE this time, but a training called the QPR that trains ordinary people out in the community to recognize and help one another live through their thoughts of suicide. So this free and widely available training aims at teaching folks to recognize early warning signs and how to personally be there for somebody. So research shows that when a person dies by suicide, the window of time between when they make the decision of how they will end their life and when they actually act is often very short. It's often 10 minutes or less. But in this moment of emergency, people are telling a new story. Psalm 88 testifies to the fact that in the depths of crisis, people like He-Man the Ezrahite still have the ability to talk about their feelings, even in that terrible darkness. He-Man has this power to cling to the mystery that holds him and surrounds him, even when he cannot feel the divine presence. When a person who is suicidal is invited to share openly about their feelings and thoughts of suicide, it is an opportunity for connection, whether that's connection to community, to a hotline, a phone app, or a crisis team. In this moment, there is the opportunity to live through the moment of danger. QPR training really encourages all of us to know that if we gently ask someone whether or not they might be thinking about suicide, we're not putting that idea into their heads. That is not possible to give someone the idea of suicide. Rather, we are opening a conversation and giving a person a chance to hear and be persuaded that life can get better. So it's not just suicide. We all get stuck sometimes on negative thoughts about our lives, the bad things that have happened to all or most of us. If these thoughts keep us from living life as we want to, from being engaged with others, it might be time to seek out support, mental health care, and treatment, whether that's from family, friends, a therapist, or a doctor. And most of us do feel feelings of sadness, you know, a few times each week. But if these sad feelings consistently interfere with our ability to maintain friendships, or get our usual tasks done, or keep us awake more nights than not, these are signs that we could likely benefit from additional mental health support. And the people who usually miss this kind of message are those who are 60 years old and older. They often, research shows, are more inclined to dismiss their own mental health as unimportant or see it as indulgent to seek mental health care. And as rightly concerned as we are with our youth, according to the CDC, the group at the highest risk of suicide today are men who are 65 and older. And the second most highest risk age group are adults who are 85 years old and older, regardless of gender. But we are telling a new story. There's another training, and yes, a third acronym, that is called Mental Health First Aid, also free, also widely available online and in our community. Mental Health First Aid teaches a simple formula called ALGI for supporting each other through times of mental health challenges. So ALGI stands for to assess what a person is experiencing, including thoughts of suicide. To L, listen patiently, and especially without judgment. To G, give information about mental health and how this feeling is common and it does get better. To E, encourage professional help, like seeking out a therapist or being connected to community. And a second E, to encourage self-help and self-care, like exercise and diet and sleep. There's a great example of ALGI in King Saul's story today. When he begins to suffer from these ongoing and cyclical periods of mental distress, he meets a young man named David, who would become King David. David brings his lyre and provides soothing music for this elderly veteran. But more importantly, he is caring and compassionate even in the face of Saul's confusion and angry outbursts. As people of faith, we may not all have a lyre or even a lyra, but we are all called and capable of listening and encouraging those who are suffering from mental distress through no fault of their own. So we've got ALGI, QPR, and WISE. This is a new alphabet soup of support and understanding that is brewing for all of us who sometimes need help overcoming mental health challenges. And all of us are part of this solution. So what story are you going to tell after today? A story of hopeless statistics that the kids are not all right? Or a story of this moment when we as a society are deciding to become wise about mental health. There are millions who have survived mental health crises and who navigate ongoing mental health challenges right here in our community and our church. We are living the story of recovery and paying it forward by contributing to communities of care. May we be part of this life-giving movement, this alphabet soup that includes truthful testimonies about suffering, healing words shared between people, and soothing songs which create feelings of hope and connection.